What are the things that you would make big sacrifices for? The Christians in ancient Corinth were aiming at the wrong things. Or rather, they were missing some very important ambitions. And as a result, they were growing less keen on the Apostle Paul, their founder, and on his teaching. Now, we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 9 this morning. If you were here when we looked at chapter 8, you will know that Paul was answering a question that they had asked him. Can we eat meat that has first been offered as a sacrifice to one of the Greek gods? And Paul had answered that question. Even if it was okay to eat that meat in and of itself, some Christians in your church thought it really was offered to another god. So don't eat it. Their conscience wouldn't cope. And in chapter 10, he'll say more on meat offered to idols. But first he pauses and he writes chapter 9. He writes to defend his ministry as an apostle. Some of the Corinthians didn't like the things that Paul said, just as some people today don't like some of the things that Paul said. And so they were looking for reasons to dismiss him. So Paul pauses to make his case that he really is a full-blown apostle. He carries Jesus' authority. What he says is to be treated as if Jesus himself had said it. Last week, we looked at the first half of this chapter. One of the ruses the Corinthians were trying in order to ignore Paul was to point out that Paul was not paid for what he did. Other people are paid. If Paul was free, he obviously wasn't as good. Now, in the second half of the chapter, we discover another ruse they'd come up with. Not only was Paul not paid, he was also not consistent. He's just told them not to eat meat that's been offered to an idol. But they know for a fact that sometimes he does exactly that. He obviously doesn't really believe what he teaches. He's not to be taken seriously. He's not consistent. Except that they've got Paul completely wrong. They don't understand two of his key priorities in life. They don't understand what makes him tick. If they did, they would see why he sometimes eats this meat. It's not about inconsistency, it's about something else. So as Paul defends himself, he outlines his two priorities in life, the things he is aiming at. And he does this so that the Corinthians might share his priorities. He does it so that we might share his aims in life as well. Paul's first ambition, we'll spend most of our time on this one, his first ambition was to win the lost. To win the lost. Paul talks yet again about reining in his freedoms. Earlier in this chapter, he was free to charge for his work, but he chose not to use that right. Here, he has a right not to live under the Jewish law. He could eat pork, wear mixed fibres, and so on. And yet, verse 20, to the Jews, I became like a Jew. To those under the law, I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law. Equally, he has a right to follow the requirements of the Jewish law. He was a Jew before he became a Christian, and he can live like one if he wants to. And yet, verse 21, to those not having the law, I became like one not having the law. And then he refers back to chapter 8. Some Christians in Corinth have weak consciences. They think false gods actually exist. And so he would refrain from eating idol meat. Verse 22, to the weak, I became weak. Paul would adopt the culture, the way of life, the diet, the habits of any group, Jew or Gentile. He would limit himself to a kosher diet 1 minute, and the next he would deliberately eat outside of those restrictions. Imagine a Paul ministering today in the London borough of Tower Hamlets. Imagine the fuss in some Christian circles if he deliberately ate a halal diet. How can he accept a Muslim diet? The man's a Christian, not a Muslim. But then imagine the fuss from a different group of Christians if the next day he deliberately went to a barbecue and ate a vast quantity of pork sausages. How can he be so insensitive in this area? Doesn't he know the offence that might cause? And how can he be so inconsistent? Make your mind up, Paul. Which is it? Now, to the religious person, things like this are really important. And yet, no matter what way you think things ought to be done, Paul just trampled on that at times. Something else was more important to him than that. So what was it? Well, he tells us, and we can't miss it. Let me read again verses 19 to 22. This time a little more honest. I won't skip the bits that give the clue away. Though I'm free and belong to no one, I've made myself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. To the Jews I became like a Jew, to win the Jews. To those under the law I became like one under the law, though I myself am not under the law, so as to win those under the law. To those not having the law I became like one not having the law, though I am not free from God's law, but am under Christ's law, so as to win those not having the law. To the weak I became weak, to win the weak. He adopts the culture of any and every group in order to win that type of person. Win in what sense? Well, that's the second half of verse 22. I have become all things to all people, so that by all possible means I might save some. Paul wanted to see people won. He wanted to see people saved. That is the Bible's language for spiritual salvation. Being saved from sin and death. Saved from an eternity in hell. Saved for an eternity in heaven. Paul wanted to see people won. Saved. He became all things to all people to win the lost. Now let's just note in passing. He accommodated his behavior, his culture, not his beliefs, his teaching. The Christian message has always been offensive to an unbelieving world. Cast your mind back to chapter 1, a few months ago now. The message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. And yet he still preached Christ crucified. He could have won, in inverted commas, thousands more people by adapting his message to make it more acceptable. But he preached Christ crucified. A foolish message, because it is Christ he wants to win them for, not something different. He didn't water down the message, but he gladly changed his diet, his clothing, his way of life. We could even say he changed his religion, in the sense we've talked about, his customs, his food, his ceremonies, his dress. Anything to remove every obstacle he could from people hearing about the real Jesus and being saved, one for Christ. Now, if the Corinthians had shared Paul's love for the lost, they would have seen why he sometimes ate idle meat and sometimes withdrew. But instead, they prized more highly their chosen way of life, so they just dismissed him as inconsistent. What would it look like today if we were so gripped by a love for the lost, so gripped by a longing to see people saved, that we would shed any preference to see that happen? One interesting thing to note is that we're looking at this on a week when we have a combined service. In 2012, we chose to have two morning services in Kemsing rather than one. Why? Because some people aren't used to church. They find it hard to relate to a more traditional style of service. So we started a new service with them in mind. And now there's two every week. For those who will best hear the good news of Jesus through traditional Anglican forms of worship. We will offer that. For those who will best hear the good news of Jesus through something less traditional, we'll offer that too. All things for all people, so that by all possible means we might save some. So it might seem that we've done exactly what this passage is asking by adding an extra morning service to our mix. In fact, it's not quite as simple as that. Because Paul is asking for such a love for the lost that we would give up what we enjoy so that others can hear about Christ. Those who like church traditional gladly allowed an extra service to start. The real way to put this into practice would be for them to plead for their service to change, to become less traditional, so that those who find it hard to relate to a traditional church culture can hear about Jesus with ease. But that isn't what happened, and so we have two services in place of one each Sunday. Now, of course, this doesn't just affect those who like church traditionally done. Whether you like church contemporary or traditional, this forces us to ask the question, do you love those who are lost without Christ so much that you would forego your chosen style of worship in order to win them? That's a question we all have to ask. Do we love those who are currently not here more than we love the way we like things done? Or is our comfort in having the kind of worship we like more important to us? And of course it goes even bigger than that. This isn't just about being willing to lose our preferred style of worship. It touches how you spend your Saturdays, what social events you join, who you choose to spend time with. I've been chewing this over all week. It's amazing what a life-changing perspective it is. Small decisions, a favour for a particular person. Whether to spend a small amount of money on something. Take on a new light when the foremost question is, what will help win people for Christ? Or I think back to when I helped on a youth camp each summer. One year there was a boy in my room group who loved golf. He was 13. Every day for a week when the activity sign-up sheets were gathered in, he would have signed up for golf. Nobody else wanted to play. I had never played golf before that week. I never have since. I am absolutely awful at it. But every day, for a week, he and I did 9 holes. I got him to try and teach me. He had an uphill struggle, I tell you. To the golfer, I became a golfer, so that by all possible means I might save some. Maybe helping on our summer holiday club here is not your thing. If so, what an excellent chance to put this into practice. We are praying children will meet Jesus in the fun they have with us at the end of August. And if helping at that isn't your thing, here's your chance to say, for the children, I became a holiday club helper so that by all means possible I might save some. It would be worth us, each of us, asking, what is there that I could do without, not just materially, but any area of life? What could I do without because it would help others to have easier access to the Lord Jesus? In February 1885, a group of 7 young men set sail from England to China. The most well-known of them was Charles T. Studd, who became a Christian 7 years earlier. He spent the rest of his life as a missionary in China, then India, and then in Central Africa. He died in 1931, still working hard at Ibambi, in what is today the Democratic Republic of Congo. Many friends sought to dissuade him from going abroad. He replied with these words, "Some want to live within the sound of church or chapel bell. I want to run a rescue shop within a yard of hell." That's the attitude the Corinthians lacked, the drive they lacked, the love for the lost, the willingness to give up anything to see people won for Christ, to see people saved for all eternity. And God is asking each of us, how much do you care about whether others are saved, those dear to you, the wider sense of neighbour, those you don't yet know personally? Is seeing others saved the driving force in our lives. Ambition number one, to win the lost. Ambition number two is to win the race. To win the race. Paul's second priority in life is actually for himself. That might surprise us, having heard him renounce his rights, but he does also take care of himself. And he uses the picture of a race, the athletic games, verses 24 to 27. Now, the Commonwealth Games back in April seem a long time ago now. But the picture Paul gives us works for any professional sport: tennis, football, cycling. If you want to lift that trophy at Wimbledon, if you want to cycle down the Champs-Élysées with the yellow jersey on, you have to train. Raw ability isn't enough to get you through. You have to train hard. It requires discipline. But you do it to get a prize. A prize that doesn't last. Here's verses 24 and 25. Do you not know that in a race, all the runners run, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last. He's using professional sport as a picture of the Christian life. For the Christian life is like a race. We want to cross that finish line. We want to get into heaven at the end. We don't want to find that we've been disqualified. Now, we mustn't push the details too far. When he says the runners run, but only one gets the prize, he doesn't mean that only one Christian gets to heaven, obviously. He doesn't mean we're competing against each other, obviously. He's saying that we need to have the focus of the athlete who's in it to win. We're not running aimlessly. We're not going through life as though what happens after this life doesn't matter. We want to get the prize. We want to have the crown. In fact, living like a Christian is an even more urgent business than competing in sport. So to adapt a famous saying, the Christian life is not as important as winning at football. It's far more important than that. The athletes of the ancient world competed for a prize that didn't last. The Isthmian Games in Corinth were held every 4 years, probably during one of the years that Paul was staying there. He would have seen the games, possibly even as a tent maker, helped build the camp for the competitors. Now, the winner was awarded a wreath made out of, wait for it, celery. In this heat, it really didn't last. But the destiny we each reap after we die lasts forever. We will spend all eternity in whatever future God gives us. And you've seen the passion with which professional footballers, tennis players, whatever it is, train because they want to win. You've seen the passion of supporters cheering when the match is going well, in despair when things fall apart, which for us Brits is the more useful of the two experiences to get to know. We should care so much more about winning that prize than even the highest profile sports trophy. Let me deal with the obvious way this could be misunderstood. He's saying that we need to put in some effort. He's saying that we need discipline and focus to win the prize. That does not mean our efforts and hard work are what get us into heaven. Paul's already said that only Christ crucified gets anyone to heaven. Just last week, Paul was saying that a place in heaven is a free gift. It cannot be earned. It has to be received as a gift. So when Paul speaks of effort, he does not mean the effort to make ourselves good enough for God. He means living our lives wholeheartedly for God. He means that what pleases God needs to matter supremely. We said this in chapter 5. We don't treat sin as a joke. We are grateful that God has saved us. And we work with all our might to become the people that Jesus wants us to be. In verse 19, he said that he's a free man. He's not a slave of anyone, but he makes himself a slave to everyone so as to win the lost. That's the first verse of our reading. The last verse says something very similar. Verse 27, no, I strike my body and make it my slave so that after I've preached to others, I myself will not be disqualified for the prize. So let me once again ask each of us about our ambition. How much do you care whether you are saved? Is what pleases God the driving force in your life? Is your life focused on ambitions of things you want to achieve in this life? That could be selfish ambitions, places you want to visit, experiences you want to have. They could be serving ambitions, people you want to help, situations you want to transform. Or is your life focused on a crown that will last forever? Do you have the athlete's focus on the finishing line, running as though the one thing that matters is that you make it across without being disqualified? Win the race. Win the lost. Win the race. Two things matter to Paul more than anything else. The Corinthians did not see this. They did not share his ambitions. So they just dismissed Paul as a man who was not consistent. They found reasons to ignore the Apostle Paul. They found reasons to live as they pleased and not to live as Jesus asked them to. The two things that mattered most were this: winning the lost, helping others to cross the finishing line, and winning the race, making sure he crosses it himself. Are those your ambitions, or do you live for something else?